We will continue, if we may, with what we have talking about last Sunday. Some of you probably were not here, so may I briefly restate what we were talking about. One would like to point out, if one may, that this is not an entertainment. Most people are used to be entertained, sustained by somebody else's words, actions, and so on. This is not a lecture, as it's commonly understood. Nor are we trying to direct or tell you what to do. This is not a propaganda. But we are thinking together, which is a rather difficult question, problem, because each one wants think in his own particular way, in his own point of view, and so on. But here, during these last four talks, we were saying how important it is that we should think together. The capacity to think, not about something, but that comes a little later, but to think, which is to observe what is actually going on outside in the world, and also to be aware of all the difficulties, psychological travail that one has, and to discover for oneself the relationship between the so-called individual and his activity psychologically and the world. We were saying also this outward society which has become so dangerous, so insecure, is the result of our own daily activities. Perhaps the past generations have added to it, but we are responsible actually for all that is taking place in the world. And also we pointed out that our consciousness, that is, the consciousness of each so-called individual, what he thinks, what he believes, his feelings, his despairs, his loneliness, his fears, his pleasures, his enjoyments, his peculiar form of worship, and so on, those are the content of our consciousness. And that this consciousness is common, if one may use that word common, to all mankind. Wherever you go, in this marvelous earth which you are slowly destroying, wherever one goes, even if you go as a tourist, there is this problem. For all human beings, they suffer, they go through great agonies. The fear of loneliness, not being able to stand alone, their form of worship, their beliefs, their gods and so on, just like in the West. So, as we pointed out, when you go into this question very deeply, this consciousness, which each one of us thinks that it is ours, our special property, is the common property of mankind. So, consciously, deeply, we are not individuals. Though all religions, all society, all families and so on have maintained that we are separate individuals with our own peculiar tendencies, capacities, outward forms, name and so on. We are the rest of mankind. Therefore we are mankind. We are the world and the world is us. This is not a peculiar exotic theory, something as an ideal, but an actual psychological fact. Whether you like it or not, this is a fact. Because you suffer, and the Asiatics also suffer. You have your many problems, and so have they. You are a nationalist, and so are they. You want security, permanency, endurance, continuity, so do they. So, the illusion that we are, in our consciousness, separate individuals, is not a fact. And when one realizes that, not as an idea, not an idealistic concept, something that we have to strive after, but rather that this is the ground on which all human beings throughout the world stand. And also we were pointing out that in our relationship with each other, intimate or otherwise, man and woman, there is a great deal of strife, great deal of misunderstanding, contradiction, each one psychologically going his own way, pursuing his own ambition or her fulfillment, and so on, like two parallel lines never meeting, perhaps sexually. And also we are pointing out the nature of fear, the various forms of fear, and whether human beings who have carried this terrible burden of fear for millennia upon millennia can ever be free of it completely. We went into it very deeply, step by step. And it is possible, not a theory, not a goal, but it is possible actually to be totally, completely free of psychological fears. And also, we talked about the pursuit of pleasure. More and more in this world, outwardly, various forms of entertainment, both religious as well as the various facts of entertainment, football, and so on. And we are also pointing out how mechanical we are becoming, repeating the same thing over and over and over again, which is what the computer is doing. May do it more rapidly, more efficiently, more widely. But our own minds, our own feelings are repetitive. So, we're going to talk about this morning, if you will permit it, why is it that we human beings who have lived on this earth for over a million years or more, why we have become what we are? Brutal, violent, contradictory, killing each other in the name of God, in the name of country. In the name of peace. There used to be a slogan after the First World War which said, "This war, like the next war, is to end all wars." And this repetitive process of killing each other has been going on. Though we are highly educated, technologically extraordinarily efficient, but psychologically we are very, very primitive. And we were saying, why is it that we do not change? Why is it that there is no end to all this terrible individualistic competitive drive which is destroying the world? And we're going to talk about together the nature of what we consider love. This has been a question that has existed among the ancient Egyptians, the ancient Hindus, and recently in the Christian world, and the Muslimic, Islamic concept. They've all preached, talked about loving your neighbor, and so on. This has been asserted religiously in all the countries. But apparently, we have never come to realize what it is. We talk a great deal about. Books are written. But we have created a god or gods, and we love that god or gods. We don't know exactly the nature of that beauty. So we ought to, though we went to it briefly the other day, we ought to go into this question very deeply. Is it mere sensory responses? sexual pleasure. Please, as we say, this is not a talk. This is not the speaker asserting any point of view, but we are together examining. I'll repeat over again, together. We are inquiring into this, into the nature of what one calls love. So one must ask oneself whether it is mere sensory sexual responses, which more and more in the Western world, as well, now which is creeping into the Eastern world, it has been turned into pleasure. Is love pleasure? A form of entertainment? A thing which demands some kind of sensory fulfillment? Is it desire? We went into the question of what is desire very carefully. How desire arises and the demand of its fulfillment. When there is no fulfillment, there is frustration. And all the neurotic activities of unfulfilled desire. We went into that. It would be unnecessary if you come for the first time, and one hopes that you will not mind if you will not go into it again. So is love desire? If it is, then all the complications, frustrations, the demand of its fulfillment, with all the conflicts that arise. So is love conflict? Please, one must repeat this again. You are asking these questions, not the speaker. Speaker is merely pointing out what you are, what you yourself are examining. Not merely verbally, intellectually, as a thing of passing by, but actually in daily life. Is love a movement which has continuity in pleasure and desire? You are asking the question. And why is it pleasure has become so extraordinarily important in the world? Whole entertainment industry, so-called sports, and the, if you'll forgive also, the religious entertainment, which is considered sacred. These are the various forms of pleasure. And so one asks, is love a movement an endless movement of pleasure. Is love attachment? Attachment to a belief, to a concept, to knowledge, to a person, or to a symbol? If attachment, in attachment there is fear, all the agony of not, of being alone. So if one sees the consequences of attachment, one is attached to the country, to the flag, as everyone in the world is doing that. The separative, symbolic flag. Asiatics have their own flags to which they are terribly attached, as in this country, for which you are willing to kill each other, which is what is happening now. And we say, that's a principle that an oppressor, that a country which has become aggressive must be pushed back. And so we are willing to kill others. This has been the old repetition from the most ancient of days. And every religion, the most ancient ones and the recent ones of 2,000 years, always said love. Do not kill. But our pleasure overcomes this edict. So one must, if one is at all serious in our relationship to each other, man and woman, relationship with the rest of humanity, whether they're black, white, or purple, or whatever color they be, in that relationship, why is there so much conflict? Is it that in that relationship we seek security, safety? And this search for security in relationship, is that, and naturally fulfillment in that relationship, is that love? So please inquire, let's inquire together into this question very deeply. If all that is not love, the attachments, the desire to fulfill, the urge and the fear of being alone, lonely, all that, if all that is not love, like jealousy, hate, arrogance, pride, all that is not love, can it be ended? This is really quite a serious problem. Because we never end anything. Come to an end. But we want, where there's ending, a replacement. If I give up this, what will I have? So the question of ending a particular problem is really quite important. The ending. Because after all, as we're going to discuss a little later, the ending of life, which is called death, there, you cannot argue, you cannot carry over anything. There is total ending of your memories, attachments, and so on. So one should inquire most seriously if there is an ending, not finding a substitution, not demanding a guarantee that if there is an ending of this, will there be that? So we ought to inquire very deeply, as we said, can all the things which are false, like pride, arrogance, attachment and the desires, pleasures and so on, which obviously are not love, can all that end? Because without love in life, the perfume, the passion, the depth of life, as you know, is lost. Life becomes very, very superficial. Very mundane, worldly, which is what most of the world is becoming, more and more. Because we have never found out for ourselves what it is to love another. Love is not a remembrance of past events and past pleasures. Love is not knowledge. But yet knowledge has played an extraordinary part in our life. Because there are all the scientists and the biologists and so on, saying that the ascent of man is only through knowledge. We so easily accept what the professionals say. We never inquire for ourselves. It's one of the calamities, I think, one may be wrong, that books have become so important. What other people have said and written. All the professionals, psychologists, we're talking of the, not the professionals in the technological world, but the psychological professionals who have accumulated a great deal of knowledge about oneself, about other human beings. And that knowledge, will knowledge transform man? Transform totally, completely the nature of his consciousness, not partially, not here and there, little less fear, little more kindness, little more generous, less conflict, but will this knowledge that man has acquired through many, many, many centuries about the psyche, about the various divisions in consciousness, will knowledge, that is the accumulated information and accumulated experience, will that knowledge transform the whole content of man, content of his consciousness? Please ask this question of yourself. You have studied, you have inquired about yourself, or you have been told by other psychologists what you are, and you have accumulated knowledge about yourself, perhaps not too much but little, and that has that knowledge being always in the of the past. Whether that knowledge has transformed man or a totally different kind of energy, totally different kind of activity or non-activity, will that bring about transformation in consciousness? Because this is again important to understand and go into. There are those who say consciousness, man is conditioned. You cannot possibly transform that condition. Whole philosophy, whole school of exists, believing that, asserting it, writing all about it by very, very clever people. And if it cannot possibly be transformed, then we'll perpetually live in conflict. Live in contradiction, continue in neuroticism of various kinds. So, is knowledge of one's wife going to transform the conflict that exists between man and woman? So one has to ask, what place has knowledge? All that you have learned in school, college, university, your own personal experiences, the accumulated reservoir of memory, which is stored in the brain, which is the past, meeting the present may modify itself and continue in that modified in time as the future. So we're asking, Will that knowledge, has that knowledge brought about deep change in human beings so that they will not kill, so that there is no fear whatsoever psychologically, so that human beings have this extraordinary capacity to love another. And has not knowledge become a barrier to love? Please do inquire into all this. So can there be ending to all the things that prevent, that perfume? And it cannot be brought about through conflict, through struggle, through the assertion of will. For after all, will is the summation of desire, the essence of desire. We also should talk over together one of the most complex and apparently endless suffering. Suffering not only separative, individualistic, personal suffering, but also the suffering of mankind. There have been so many wars, practically every year throughout the world for the last 5,000 years and more. War that means every year killing, killing, killing. How many millions have suffered, shed tears, felt the flame of loneliness, and yet we do not apparently use our intelligence to stop this cruelty, this bestiality of violence, which we talked about too the other day. So there is suffering. Both physically and non-physically. The understanding of suffering non-physically will help physical suffering. So we must first inquire together into the nature of suffering, why human beings psychologically, inwardly, go through agonies. This inquiry is not cynical or sadistic, but this must be, one must inquire whether suffering psychologically can end. Is that question self-motivated? Is that question irrelevant? Because we are inflicting psychologically a great deal of suffering on others. we get hurt deeply, which we talked about at the beginning of this talk, of these talks. That's also suffering. And the consequences of being hurt psychologically. We went into it. The resistance, the isolation, fears and so on. And in the Christian world, suffering has been avoided. The worship of a symbol. But suffering still exists. The Asiatic world, they have all kinds of explanations for suffering, but yet they suffer. Apparently, there is no end to suffering. The human sorrow, the human pain, the grief that seems to have no end. And we ought to inquire together, not verbally, intellectually, but all romantically, find out whether it is possible, whether there is an ending completely of sorrow. Because where there is sorrow, there is no love. Where there is sorrow, there is no compassion. Where there is sorrow, there is no depth through intelligence. So one must go into this question. Who is it that suffers? This is related to the question of death also. We'll go into that too. There's time this morning. Who is it that goes through agony, tears, and utter loneliness and despair when you lose somebody whom you think you love? Who is it that suffers? What is the nature of that feeling or that state in the unconsciousness? You understand all this? We are meeting each other, aren't we? Or the speaker is talking to himself. These are your problems, not that of the speaker. So please listen, inquire, find out. Not leave it to somebody else. Because if you leave it to somebody else to solve this problem, then you depend on others, and therefore you lose your own intrinsic capacity to solve all the human problems of which you are. So we are asking, who is it that suffers? When you say, shed tears, feel utterly lost, the shock of something you have held dear is gone or lost, who is it that has this feeling of great pain which means who is it? Who is the I that says I suffer? Who is this entity that feels this shock and the pain and the despair of loneliness? Please, this is an important question to put to and to ask, because for when we are inquiring into death, into the nature of dying, though on a lovely morning it may be morbid, but it's not. There too, who is it that is dying? Who is the psyche? What is the nature of the psyche, the me, the I, that suffers? You know, we have clung to the idea the I is something permanent. The I has something, has a continuity. The repetition, my house, my property, my house, my knowledge, my experience, my conditioning, my fear, my pleasure, which is secretive. So, who is this I? The various psychologists have given various interpretations to it. If we could put aside all the psychologists, what they have said, and observe for ourselves, including what the speaker is saying, observe for ourselves very clearly, without any direction, without any motive, actually what we are. The ancient Greeks and the ancient Hindus have talked about knowing yourself, not according to some professional, but know yourself. What is that self, and what is it to know about it? You see, what is the self, and to know about it, and what is the knowledge that is accumulated after knowing about it? You understand the question? Can I know myself through time? That is, I have learned, I have observed myself, watched all the reactions in my relationship with another, intimate or otherwise. I've accumulated a great deal of knowledge through that observation. And when I observe again other reactions, other idiosyncrasies and sensory responses, that previous knowledge interprets what is actually happening. Right? Are you following all this? So, you are actually not knowing yourself. You are perpetuating the knowledge which you have acquired through various examinations and observations, which has become your knowledge, and that knowledge is beginning again to interpret the present responses or the present happenings and incidents. So you are perpetuating the knowledge which you have acquired, modified, and projecting into the future. This cycle is knowledge, action, learn from that action, which becomes further knowledge. So keep the cycle going. I hope you understand. Isn't that so? We are not telling you anything that you have not observed it yourself, if you have observed. So, to know oneself really deeply, previous remembrance, previous knowledge has no place. You have to observe each incident and each response as though for the first time. That is to know, observe, enter into the field of this immense life which is specialized as the me. Where there is the me, the self, there is no love. So it's very important to find out for oneself and not escape from this question. Because it's your life. It's your responsibility. If you merely avoid it and run away into various forms of entertainment, you are bringing about great disaster in the world, for which you are utterly, totally responsible. And where there is the ending of suffering, there is compassion. Suffering, the ending of it, is to have passion. There is a vast difference between lust and passion. Lust, everybody knows. But the passion, not identified with some symbol, Christian or Asiatic symbols. We have lost that. We have not that passion. When the missionaries, the evangelists, the preachers of God and all the rest of it, they are salesmen. To have passion. Passion to go, understand the brutality, the violence, the fears, and the agony, to resolve them. So their mind is free from all the contamination of struggle. Must have great energy for that. To go into this. But if one is merely caught in fear, pleasure. Pleasure is different. From delight, watching something most beautiful. But the remembrance of in the desire to continue in that remembrance is pleasure. And if we have time, And if you're not tired this morning, we ought to consider together this immense complex problem of death. As pleasure, fear, attachment, hurt, the conflict in relationship, that's our daily reality. And death is also part of our life. It's not something that comes at the end of life. After old age, disease, accident, it's part of this whole business of living. And we never consider the importance of death, the quality, the depth of that word. Most people are afraid of it. And being afraid, they've invented all kinds of theories which will give them comfort. In the Asiatic world, the origin of it perhaps born in India, reincarnation. That is, the me dying will have an opportunity next life to be more happy or more greedy and so on. In the Christian world, there is this whole concept of resurrection. You hear about it all day, wherever you go, in the Asiatic world and here. And which is important? What is after death or before death? Please ask this question of yourself. Because most of us, being frightened of death, either rationalize it, say it is inevitable, like a tree grows, withers, dies. Everything grows, becomes old, and ends, withers away. So, we rationalize our existence. If you are an intellectual, or we have a very good time during life, popular, money, etc., then you will say, "What I've had a jolly good life." Or, as most of us, laymen, our life is shallow, insufficient. Perhaps technologically we are good, money, position, status, or we are just feeble human beings, uncertain, no security psychologically, and so our life becomes rather dreary, meaningless. So, shouldn't we consider first What is our life? Not what it is to die. We'll come to that. What is our life? From the moment we are born till the moment we die. What actually goes on with our life? You know all about it, we don't have to repeat it. If you have grown up an adult, you work in a factory, or a businessman, lawyer, from morning till night. Repeat, repeat, repeat. And if you're a housewife, you know all that business, one hasn't got to go into all the details of it. So our life is pretty shallow. Whether it's the scientist, or great philosophers, or generals, or politicians, apart from their title and position, they are just like other human beings, vain, frustrated psychologically, seeking position, you know, all the rest of it. So, our daily life is a routine and an escape from that routine. Our daily life is work, 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 without any leisure. And if there is leisure, which is called holidays, it's mere enjoyment. So our life is shoddy, tawdry. Please excuse these words, they are just describing what it is. With occasional flare of great beauty and depth and happiness. The ending of all that is to die. And man, woman, throughout the world, is more concerned about death than living. Living without conflict. Living with great energy, living in clarity, living without a shadow of conflict. And that's possible only if fear ends completely, psychologically. Then there is no need for gods. So what is it that dies? The accumulation of the knowledge about oneself, the accumulation of your properties, the accumulation of all the things to which you are attached. So is it possible to live? Please understand this. To live with death all the time. That's the ending as you live everything, day after day. Do you understand? That means the mind is incarnating afresh each day. That is creation. That is a mind that's creative. Not inventive. There's a vast difference between inventiveness and creation. All the technological world and the technicians of that world are inventive. Because they're using knowledge. And from knowledge to knowledge they move, but they're never free from the knowledge, so that there is a new beginning totally. So, to live with death, not commit suicide, that's too silly. To live with death, to end my hurt, end it completely. End one's attachment and so on. So that life and death are moving together all the time. Do it. If one applies one's mind and energy to this inquiry and its activity, then there is a totally different kind of life. And we'll talk about it tomorrow. What place such a life in this world, and is that a religious life? And the place of a religious life in meditation and so on. May I get up, sir?